This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode 223. What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
You're disappointed, aren't you? My name is John.
What am I disappointed about?
Because it's no longer 222, triple two.
Triple two was nice.
We're not going to have another one for a while.
Trio Deuce was nice.
No. Maybe at 234, you know, yeah. But even that's not like, 1-2-3 would be a cool one, but right. 234 is like,
yeah. It's all right. We'll get to episode 333 in just two years and 10 weeks and...
So I gotta say, like, I don't have a lot of news this week, or a lot of trailers.
I don't have really any news or trailers this week.
But I got a lot of shows.
I watched a ton. Yeah, I watched a lot of movies.
I only watched two movies, and they're reruns. But I'll explain that when we get to it, because it was for a good cause. It was for Cheez-Its.
I watched six movies.
It was for Cheez-Its, Mike.
Okay, I believe you. Okay. Oh no, seven movies.
Wow. I assume some of those were reruns.
I didn't watch any new movies. They're all reruns. My kids came over, and so we watched. Well, actually, I did watch one new I'd never seen before, but the kids were over here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Kane and I watched the movie every night after everyone else went to bed.
That's four.
Yeah, and Addison and I watched a movie together.
Oh, that's five.
And then I watched...
Now I'm committed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did watch a brand new movie I'd never seen that isn't that old.
Okay.
And then I watched...
That's six.
And then I watched just one by myself.
Seven. Porn doesn't count.
I didn't watch any porn. I didn't think about that. I didn't watch any porn.
And really, who watches a whole porn?
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody. Well, one time. One time. And when you're younger.
Right. Oh, exactly. Yeah. You know, you're like, I paid for this.
Yeah.
I walked into the store.
Yeah.
I bought the VHS tape. Yeah. I may as well commit to it.
I remember when we worked at Movie Gallery, and this was end of the 90s, everybody. Early 2000. Like, literally the year 2000.
Yeah.
Working at Movie Gallery, we had the porn room in the back. And, like, there's people that just, I don't want to go in there. And it's like, well, why not? It's just a room, but okay, so I'll go in there.
Somebody might molest me while I'm in there.
There's a camera. We have a camera.
Yeah, and they're not gonna. They're in there for another room. If anything, it's like spiders. They're more scared of you than you are of them.
Exactly. But we had this one guy that would rent eight at a time. But he would bring them back like 3 days later. And I'd make the comment, oh, it'd take you long to dub them this time. Like, because clearly he's dubbing them all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one guy who would rent four of them at a time, and they'd be back within like 2 hours. And I'm like, dude, you're not even pretending.
Right, yeah.
Like, at least give us the illusion. You've got these things for like 5 days. Just pretend.
Yeah. And then there was my favorite thing. By accident, I was stalking because we had the buy two, get two free for a while there on the porn page. Yeah. And so the sell-through was going like crazy. And I remember one day, like, stalking a whole shelf facing of 20, 25 or 26 VHS cover, and these are the oversized cover boxes.
Oh, yeah.
That's how the porn was. I mean, it wasn't your standard tape size. It was at least 3-4 inches longer and wider than a tape is. But I remember like doing a whole facing with the same actress on the front, and it was a different movie every single one of them.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, same exact actress. And then another time I did all six shelves. The same actress on each shelf. So, like, each shelf had the same actress on all the cover boxes, but each shelf was a different actress. And it was just like, I didn't even have to try hard
right
to find them either. It was just like, this is funny. Oh, wow, look what I just did. So
I remember there was one guy who used to come in and would rent them regularly.
Yeah.
Because you had your regulars.
Oh, yeah.
In all facets.
Yes.
And so you had your porn regulars.
Yes.
Porn regulars.
Yeah.
Jesus. And we had this one guy, and he was, like... he looked like a stiff wind would blow him over.
Right.
Like he was maybe 60 years old, feeble, you know, and he'd kind of like, eh. And I always had to bite my tongue because he'd always come in and rent porn,
yeah,
and then he'd bring it back. But then every now and then he'd show up with a younger woman. I think it was his daughter.
Yeah.
And they'd walk around and look at regular movies. And, you know, you couldn't be like, hey, so-and-so, which
right.
I'm saying so-and-so, but I still remember his name to this day.
Probably not listening.
So-and-so, somebody else might be because of the next part of this story. You know, hey, you've got a late fee on those pornos that you rented.
Yeah.
Hint, hint. No, I have seen that guy in the cafeteria at my workplace.
Oh.
Yes. With that same younger woman who I think is his daughter. And by younger, I mean like this guy was like 60. She was like 40.
Yeah.
40 something.
It could be married.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. It's a brave new world.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, they're still in some kind of together thing in the cafeteria at my work. And like you said, that was 2000. So that was 20 years ago.
That must be sad. They can't rent porn anymore.
I know. Well, Pornhub.
Yeah, that's true.
That must have been a very happy day.
Yeah, well, probably it was. I remember this one guy that used to come in, and this is not porn related, but the only thing he rented was Die Hard 1, 2, and 3, Die Hard 1, 2, and 3, over and over and over and over and over again. And he would, oh, Die Hard's such a great, and he had clearly had some sort of slowness going on. Oh, Die Hard's such a great movie. It's such a good movie. I just like it so much. I mean, that Bruce Willis, he's so great. You ever watch any other Bruce Willis movie? Oh, just Die Hard. I watch just Die Hard. And he would always rent them all the time. And I was finally like, why don't you just buy them? I mean, like, you rent, you don't even get like the five for $5.99. You pay the full $2 a piece. You spend more money to rent three than you do to rent five. So, like, why don't you just buy them? Oh, you can do that? Well, let me check. So, yeah, three pack of VHS is $9.99. Here, I'll order it for you. So when they came out, like, hey, your Die Hards came in. He paid for them, left, never saw them again. He really had no other reason to come to the video store other than to rent Die Hard.
Probably the happiest he'd ever been in his life was, now I never have to go back there because I always own
them. I own them. These are mine forever. That's a good movie. Really, Ben, it is. Have you seen that movie? No.
No.
But I heard it's a good movie. Yeah.
So, what'd you watch this week, Mike?
I watched a shit ton. How about you?
Yes, I picked up a recurring show, a couple of new shows.
And a couple of new shows and a returning show myself. Let's just talk. Go ahead. You said.
Oh, I was going to say, once again, getting my money's worth out of HBO Max.
Oh, really?
Doom Patrol.
Yep.
Season 2 continues to be great. This episode was called Sex Patrol.
Nice.
Involved a happy party, and the Sex Men showed up, which was DC's answer to the X-Men, yeah, except for they investigate,
yep,
sex crimes.
Why not?
With code names like Cuddles. And yeah. It was, yeah, because they were there investigating a paranormally strong O that, I have to be careful because your son's right out there. Paranormally strong O that was powerful enough to attract the attention of a demon, a sex demon, who has a telescope coming out of his head, was sitting in a monastery in Tibet, and the periscope went up and he detected this, so he was going to go there and suck the energy out of this to create sex ghosts in the mansion. And when the energy got high enough, he would give birth to a baby, and if the baby cried, then all children on Earth would disappear, and it would only be adults left, and they would all just have an overwhelming urge to just have sex all the time.
Mm. And they thwarted this for what?
Up any of this.
They thwarted this because?
Because then the human race would have died out, because there would be no kids, and it would just be people humping all the time.
Well, I didn't know that people couldn't make new kids again.
Well, that was the also, this week, Season 2 of the animated Harley Quinn dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Great show. I think I like Season 1 better, but Season 2 has more nuance to it.
Yeah.
We've been introduced to Batgirl. Christopher Maloney does a great job as a disgraced, drunk loser of a Jim Gordon. I mean, he is a complete loser. Got to see a little bit of Batman. We got to see, they opened one of the episodes with two very toxic DC fans. That's fine. Yeah, two very toxic DC fanboy bros.
Yeah.
You know, one of them is actually wearing a shirt that says, release the Snyder Cut.
Oh, God.
And they're talking about, you know, how, like, Harley Quinn is the dumbest show ever, and every week she solves the problem, you know, by using her Mary Sue powers. It was great. I loved it.
That is actually pretty cool.
Yep. But I've been binging that while I walk, so I've been enjoying that. HBO Max, dude, you know, what's its face there? Lovecraft Country's coming on. Mm-hmm. I still haven't checked out what is that one? I want to say Perry Mason, but it's...
Perry Mason, yeah. one that came back, yeah.
Yep, I haven't checked that one out yet, but it's just, it's really good. Like, of all the streaming services, like, right now for me, it's Netflix, Hulu, and that. Like, I'm getting more mileage out of that than Disney or... basically any of the others.
I know.
CBS All Access, I don't even care about.
You should just cancel then, not spend $8 a month. But
Lower Decks is about to come out.
Fair enough. I was thinking that early, like this past weekend, it's like, I really, like, I don't watch Disney Plus much, mm-mm. but my kids do.
Right.
So it's worth it there.
Yep. Plus you're already locked in for 3 years.
Oh, yeah, which doesn't bother me at all. If when it comes up, it's like, 3 more years for $150? Yep. But no, I don't watch it a ton. We did watch it this past weekend a little bit.
And when The Mandalorian comes back.
Oh, hell yeah. And all the other shows that are supposed to be coming to Disney Plus here, all the right. Marvel shows. So I did watch an old show from 2005.
Oh.
I bought the new Night Stalker series on DVD with Stuart Townsend. It was created by, and the showrunner was Frank Spotnick. He was part of the X-Files. For those that don't know, Chris Carter, when he developed the X-Files, the inspiration for him was watching the old Darren McGavin, Kolchak, the Night Stalker series from the 70s. That was what inspired him to do the X-Files. And that's why an episode, Darren McGavin's in an episode of the X-Files, and he was supposed to be in more, but he became ill during filming and then passed away. But then in season 10, episode 3, The Werehuman, that character, that actor, he's wearing Darren McGavin's suit from Kolchak the Night Stalker. Anyhow, so I bought this series on DVD. I remember watching it when it was on TV initially. I watched a couple of episodes, and then it got canceled by episode 6. And then I bought the DVD probably 10 years ago or better. I just never watched it. I brought it with me everywhere. It's been sitting on my shelf. It's one of those, like, I'm going to get to it. But there was just so much other stuff I was watching. Mm-hmm. Oh, the pandemic and everything like that going on and working from home, I find I have more time to watch stuff.
Yeah.
So I busted that out, and I've watched – there's only 10 episodes. 6 of them made air. The other 4 never got released. They got played in reruns, like, on Chiller and Sci-Fi, but not in an original run. So I watched the first 5 episodes. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Stuart Townsend, Gabrielle Union, has a real big X-Files feel to it. He's a reporter for the Los Angeles Beacon, and of course, everything that, you know, of course, he comes across like supernatural style investigations. So I enjoy the hell out of it. If you like the X-Files or you like that type of thing, you know, you can buy the DVD set for probably $10 now on eBay or something. And if you want to borrow, you can. Talking to John directly, not anybody else. I'm not mailing it out to people. I think it's worth a watch. So I kind of enjoyed the first 5 episodes over the last week or so. A one a night type of thing.
Thanks. Before
bed.
I picked up, well, let's see. I picked up a new show on Netflix called Norseman. And apparently it's like 3 seasons in.
Yeah.
Did you watch this at all?
No, I didn't watch it. I've heard good about it. I didn't watch it. I probably could have thrown it on today. Instead, I watched the last while I was working. I watched the last 3 episodes of the season of SVU because I just hadn't gotten around to it.
Yeah. I only watched the first episode.
Yeah.
And it definitely, like, it kept popping up at the top of my Netflix thing. So I was like, whatever, it's half an hour. I'll check it out. It gave me vibes of a cross between Monty Python and What We Do in the Shadows. It's basically these Norsemen and... you're seeing a Norse village. In the beginning, the ship is on its way back, and you got some funny little banter. But again, it's not like laugh track banter. It's like, I wish that they could have done like a What We Do in the Shadows confessional kind of thing, but they didn't. Instead, we just got people who were talking about some funny stuff. But like, one of the scenes that really stands out to me. There were two scenes that really stood out to me. One of them was they took all the old guys to the top of this cliff, yeah, and the slave that took them up there, he's like, okay, so if you jump off here, you'll go to glory. You know, this is your glory.
Midsummer.
And so the first one jumps and just splatters on the rocks, and the next one's like, I don't want to do that. And he's like, well, that's how you get glory. And he goes, how about this? How about we just walk away? And the guy's like, well, technically I'm a slave, so I can't stop you anyway, but you can't go back to the village because they want you gone. Like, you're old. He's like, fine, we'll just go start our own village. We'll be okay. I'll play along. So they go. He goes back, and they're like, you know, did you get rid of all the old people? He's like, you'll never see them again. Yes. And then there was another scene where the boat hasn't come back yet, and so one of the head women, she's like, you know, well, we still don't have the boat back yet. I got to go sacrifice some slaves to Odin. And he's like, all right, okay. So she goes out there and like just has these slaves put their head on the chopping block, and she's like, Odin, please take our sacrifice. Bring our men back. Chop. Head goes. Next guy lines up. When they get to the third guy, it's one of the main characters, the one who took the old guys up, and he's like, can I just stop you here for a second? Are you sure that sacrificing slaves is really going to bring the men back? And she's like, why wouldn't it? Well, they haven't come back yet. Well, I haven't sacrificed enough slaves yet. He's like, okay, fair point. Like, he's trying to talk his way out of this. And he's like, you know, it's not an exact science. She goes, I know it's not an exact science, but, you know, we gotta do what we can, and this is all we know. And just as she's about to bring the axe down, of course, somebody goes, ship! And, you know, they've disembarked and they're coming along. And the slave's like, okay, so two slaves sacrificed seems to be the magic number. Maybe make a note of that. Keep a record that two seems to be a good number, not three, two. So
I might check it out, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a good vibe to it.
Let's talk about Hannibal.
Okay. Oh, Hannibal.
So I watched these last week after we recorded.
And I watched them
the next day after. Yeah.
So it's time for the fuzzy memories.
Yeah, kind of. So,
do you find that? By the way, I meant to ask you that.
Yeah.
This is something we've been doing for years now.
Yes.
Do you find that, like, in the old days, we would just watch shows and we'd talk about them, whatever.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, like, what we do, and, like, in this case, you know, I can look through here and I've got, like, a dozen shows to talk about.
Yeah.
And some of them two episodes, like Hannibal or Dark. Do you find that without notes or without a rundown in front of you, that some of these things just slip right through your brain?
Yes.
And I don't think that it's like, oh, you're getting old, you're losing your memory. I don't care. I feel like it's just trying to keep track of so much stuff that's going on in so many different shows. Like Dark alone, just watching one episode of that a week is cramming my brain. But two episodes, and then to add everything else on top of it.
So. No, it's... I hear exactly what you're saying.
And we're not stopping the show. I'm not.
No. I hear exactly what you're saying. For me, when I'm watching the show, I'll get reminded of things. Like, you know what I mean? That's how I kind of have the recall. Okay, that's right.
Yep.
And then sometimes when we sit down and talk about it, it is kind of like we're talking, and then as you're saying something, I'll be like, oh, no, I remember that vividly now. You know, or
which I guess is good that we have two people instead of just one.
And you'll do the same thing. We'll be like, oh, you're like, well, actually, it was this. It's like, okay, that's right. Because it's hard sometimes when you watch a ton of shows. I bet you if people sat down and thought about it or took a log of how much TV they watch in a week, they would be shocked at how much they watch
and how much they don't remember as a result.
Right? Because sometimes I sit down and I look at like a list of things we watch, and it's like, holy fuck, do I watch way too much TV?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, we both do.
Right, but it's easier when I'm sitting here doing my working from home, and I just have my tablet sitting up and stuff's running. That's 8 hours I'm working from home, so if I watch 8 hours of show then...
Yeah.
You know, I don't watch things I really want to pay attention to then, because I want to pay attention to them.
Yep.
You know? But it's easy. I think people would be shocked if they actually sat down and tracked how much programming they took in.
Or how much they don't take in. Because as I learned in my short foray into online dating, that there are plenty of people out there who like to brag about, I don't have a TV, I don't watch TV, I don't.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, we wouldn't have a lot to talk about.
Right.
But okay. I like to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
But I got to say, with Hannibal this week, those two episodes really needed to be watched back to back.
Yes, because I really feel like
episode four ended on a cliffhanger, and then episode five dropped us right into we knew was coming
immediately. Yes,
and holy shit! So, I think episode four was the weaker of the two.
Yeah, I did.
The
backstory is an acupuncturist played by Amanda Plummer, which I remember primarily from The Outer Limits. She was one of the only characters to do multiple episodes as the same actress on The Outer Limits. In fact. She was a big part of the series finale, which was a bit of a letdown. Her backstory basically was she lobotomizes suffering patients and then leaves them to die.
I'll always remember her as the crazy sister on So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yes, she was. Yeah.
When she offers Mike Myers that big breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, cornucopia and fresh squeezed juice and, you know. And he's like, that's great. She pours him a bowl of Fruit Loops. She's like, we didn't have that other stuff.
So she lobotomizes these patients because they're suffering, and now they're not suffering. And she doesn't see it as lobotomizing or hurting them, and she actually doesn't kill any of them.
Right.
She leaves them to die.
Right. And like, in one case, he becomes a honeycomb.
Bees make a hive in his fucking skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And across his back. I mean,
no.
They're efficient.
It was creepy.
Yeah.
Again, way too much creepy, crazy death things going on in such a small square mileage.
And meanwhile, what's his name there? Will is doing his best to go to his happy place while he's in jail.
Fishes a lot.
Yeah, he does fly fishing, and he's even got what's-her-name there with him.
I know you're talking about.
Hobbs, Abigail Hobbs.
Yeah.
And they're going to start blending together, so I apologize if I mess this up, but in between these two episodes, we actually got to see Jack's wife again.
Yeah.
Who is basically, she's in stage four cancer, she knows she's done, and she goes to Hannibal. Well, at first she talks to Jack and she's like, you know, I kind of want to go out on my own. And he's like, no, don't worry, we can fight this, blah, blah, blah. So she goes to Hannibal's office and sits down and starts talking to him and basically tells him that she took all of her morphine.
Well, yeah, he recognizes, like, kind of straight away that she overdosed on something.
Yeah. He's like, what'd you do? And she's like, I took my morphine. And she wants to die, but she doesn't want Jack to find her body, so she did it there. And he waits for her to die, flips a coin, and then whatever the result was, he goes over to his cabinet and gives her essentially Narcan. You know, he counteracts the morphine, and she ends up in the hospital and is fucking pissed.
Yep. Well, when you plan on killing yourself and you wake up from not killing yourself. Yeah, I mean, you have mentally prepared. You've overdosed. You know this is going to happen. You have mentally prepared to kill yourself, and then you wake up from it. Either one of two things. I don't mean to laugh. It's not funny, but in her case, she knew what happened, why.
Right.
But in the case of someone who does it privately and they wake up, sometimes, and I've heard people say this to me, it makes them even more depressed because they can't even fucking do that right.
Right.
So,
or on the rare case, you might have somebody who says, maybe God has a plan for me, or, you know, maybe I'm supposed to be here after all. But, yeah, so she was not thrilled that Hannibal took it into his hand. Jack, however, is much more endeared to Hannibal now because you saved my wife.
Yeah. Which, again, at first when I saw her walk in and she was dying, I thought, okay, that's why he attacks Hannibal at the beginning of this season, because he let his wife die. Nope, that's not why. Yeah. All right, moving on.
Will tells Chilton, I will talk to you and you can publish a book on me or whatever you want, but I want you to cut Hannibal out. I don't want you talking to him anymore. I don't want him.
You're going
to
be my exclusive therapist.
Yep. And Chilton can't even do that right because...
Well, no, because he has to brag.
Basically, He's running Hannibal into the ground. He's like, oh, well, you know, I talked to him and blah, blah, blah. And then Will's like, dude, I fucking told you don't talk to him and you talked to him.
But essentially, you know, he has this type of therapy with, like, I call it seizure-inducing therapy because they do the flashing lights.
Yep.
But essentially, Graham comes to realize that Lecter was, as it says here, tactically encouraging his encephalitis.
Yeah.
and he starts remembering a bunch of things. And he talks to the other doctor. Now, I don't know if I did Bloom, but I don't know if that was this episode or the next episode.
Yeah, they blend together.
Yeah. But basically, he talks to Bloom and is just like, look, you know who the Chesapeake Kill Ripper is. You know it's not you. You know who it is. You need to come forward and say.
Oh, yeah. No, not Bloom. That was Eddie Izzard's character, Gideon.
Yeah. Gideon.
He's like, yeah, you need. Because we thought Gideon was dead up until this point. Because last we saw him, he was standing out in the field. Will shot him and then collapsed.
Yes.
But apparently he didn't kill him.
No. He just...
Which is great, because I love Eddie Izzard.
I appreciate him as well. So you have that going on. So Graham kind of influences Katz, Beverly Katz, to, you know, look into Hannibal. You know, because this one person they find, the acupuncturist victim there, she tried to cover up her acupuncture needles with bee stings. That was one thing they discovered. And so he gets Beverly Katz to look at the mural killer and checks to see that the stitches on the body, they're hiding other stitches. Mm-hmm. And she essentially finds out that Hannibal's at the hospital with Graham, with Crawford and his wife. So she goes to Hannibal's house and starts snooping around. And ultimately gets down to his little dungeon area and finds frozen, frozen meats, if you will, frozen humans in these coolers and freezers and this and that. And essentially one of the last things you see is she's down in the basement, Hannibal's behind her, and it goes to the outside exterior and there's gunshots.
She grabs her gun and goes to level it on him, and he just like...
Flips the lights.
Yeah, he flips the lights, he grabs something, and he's just gone like a fucking panther. Like, he has so much speed and agility for such a refined person. You're right.
You hear gunshots, bang, and that's it.
Yep.
And then we cut to episode 5, and Freddie Lounds is back, and she shows up at this observatory. And
on an anonymous tip.
Well, yeah, and goes inside and finds that Beverly Katz has been sectioned vertically and on display.
Yeah.
Like one of those human body things where they cut slices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then when Will is brought there and replays it in his head.
Yeah.
She was frozen solid.
Yep.
And then used on a table saw.
Yep.
To slice perfect segments of her body and then encased in the glass.
Here's what's interesting. Her kidneys were removed and they show Hannibal preparing her kidneys to eat. And replaced by James Gray's mural killer kidneys.
So now they know that something is up because they checked the DNA and they were like, well, wait a minute. This DNA doesn't match her.
Right. So it's kind of...
So that was rough. That she was a good character. I enjoyed her. And she got vivisected.
Like, then we... Yeah.
That was crazy.
We get a new character.
Oh, I love this guy.
Jonathan Tucker. I'm a fan of him as an actor. He's been a lot of great stuff, including like one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake and a couple of the horror movies. And
he does a good job playing an unhinged person.
Yes. And he's an orderly at the asylum.
He was in Westworld.
Yep, that's right. He is an orderly at the asylum, and he essentially tells Graham that, he killed Sykes, the bailiff. Mm-hmm. And
he even talks to him, you know, he's like, he was hard as hell to get up on that rack of antlers.
So they made us believe that Hannibal is actually who killed him, and it turns out it was this guy.
But then he says that he didn't do the judge.
Right, he was trying to get, Graham exonerated, and he wants to know how he can serve Graham. And to my surprise, Graham says you can kill Hannibal Lecter. Because at first I thought he was just setting up Graham to see what he would say. Like, I thought someone had put him up to this. Because basically it's like, look, I'm crazy. I know I'm crazy. But guess what? You get a job at a place like this, people don't notice that you're crazy.
Right. Yeah. He's like, you do this enough years and you can blend right in and nobody even notices.
Abel Gideon overhears this because he's in the cell right next door to him now.
Yep.
So the orderly captures Lecter, tranquilizes him, if you will.
While he's swimming.
While he's out for a swim. Slits his wrists and strings him up like
crucified.
Yeah, in a noose, and has a bucket that's wobbly under his feet. And we
tells him that's the origin of the term "kick the bucket."
Yep, we get the whole evil bad guy montage, talking, and then Crawford shows up, and he, as he's falling, kicks the bucket out from underneath Hannibal, who starts to be strangled, but Crawford saves him. So, and here's the thing, he told Hannibal that he's doing this on behalf of Grimm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what happens.
I also thought it was a nice little nod or homage or whatever that when they brought Grimm to the crime scene to check out her body and see what happened, that he showed up strapped to the board in the straitjacket with the Hannibal mask.
Yeah, a version of a dolly, but not like they use. Like, it sounds like it was legit just a fucking dolly they strapped to. This was like a more fancier medical
device.
And then, of course, Crawford takes all the gear off him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the first thing that he does.
Yeah. So. You guards leave. Okay.
Yep. See ya.
And now I'm going to take all his shit off him. So. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yep.
Let's just talk about Cursed and get out of the way.
Yeah, what the fuck?
So you're finally seeing the show as I have him episode one.
I admit I was trying to, like, but holy crap. For a show that's supposed to be about stuff happening, nothing happens.
I go back to Mallrats and listening to commentary on Mallrats and Kevin Smith back before his career went down the shitter. Talking about the original opening was this big Civil War reenactment play and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they did the first take and, like, it's a 20 minutes that they finally, like, 20 minutes into the movie to get to the mall. So I was like, dude, the movie's called Mallrats. Get the kids to the fucking mall.
Yep.
It'll take 20 minutes to get there, okay? This show is taking so long to establish everything and everyone and backstories and on and on and on. To me, this is not what was advertised in the trailer.
Not at all. And it's not a Frank Miller comic.
No, this was advertised as essentially, what if Soamicide's author got the sword?
Lady of the Lake got the sword.
And they haven't established that she's the Lady of the Lake yet, because she's like the Lady of the Roots.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, it's not...
And this week we had two different things going on.
Four episodes, and they're nowhere near where I thought they were going to be with episode one.
So this week we had Nimue hiding out in the convent and pretending to be a nun while the paladins come in and, you know, basically purge the place. And then we've got Arthur with his sword going back to his homeland and saying, you know, I'll win this tournament for you if you sponsor me. I got this sword as a reward from some rich woman. And then the people he was running with show up and go, nuh-uh.
No.
He was a thief, and he took it from some fey girl.
Yeah.
And we get to see lots of flashbacks of Arthur. Who fucking cares?
We get Arthur's backstory. The reason his sister was put after his father died protecting someone else's honor, but he was drunk, so it didn't matter.
Drunkard, yeah.
And then Arthur's sister sent off to the convent, that's why he had Nimue there. And we get... Nimue using her fey magic on the guy that tried to murder and rape her, I'm guessing. The monk that you know. So she's trying to save him after she caused what's happening to him. I mean, like, I don't know. Will I watch episode 5? Probably.
Is it episode 5? I thought we were only on episode 4.
Oh, shit. Are we? We're only on episode 4. Will I watch episode
4? Episode 5 is a warrior now.
Yeah, that's right. Will I watch episode 4? Probably. But it's not a priority right now.
It's not manifest, but...
Oh, God, no. It's way better than manifest. It's just not a priority for me.
Me either. It's a background show at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of dropped off my priority list.
Speaking of...
Warrior Nun?
Hey, remember all those great parts about Warrior Nun that you liked?
Yeah.
Fuck them. Because now, she decided to just walk away from the convent and go hang out with those losers again.
Right.
Because we want to turn it back into a teen drama.
Yeah, but I think by the end of the episode, she's kind of back.
Kind
of. Well, at the end of the episode, she's squaring off with the girl that was supposed to get the halo, and that was kind of training her. So we'll see. But we did get, I don't know what her name is, I'm terrible, I'm sorry, but the Asian nun, the the one that kind of befriended Ava. We get to see her kick some tremendous amount of ass.
Oh, absolutely.
And I loved it.
And now people know that, you know, this woman is harvesting the divinium to make her portals to other dimensions because she wants to open a doorway to hell.
Yeah. I love the chainmail thing she put down over her face, and then she just kicked the shit out of everybody. And I love those, like, there's one nun beat all of you up.
Yep.
You know, like, we're going to have to hire new security. Clearly these guys aren't handling things, you know. That was some good, there were some great fight scenes in this episode. But yes, as far as story progression, we're at where we're at. Yeah. I'm more inclined to want to watch episode 5 of this than I am of episode 4 of Curse.
Yeah.
I've still heard some people say that this warrior nun does get better and better as it goes, and it, you know. So
I haven't written it off yet, but
I had written off Curse after episode 1. So I hung on for episodes 2 and 3 based on your suggestions, and now I'm like, fuck me over, John? Is this what's happening?
I may have. So I watched another new show this week.
Sure, what is it?
Called Connected. It's not what I expected. The pitch of it was that researcher...
What was it on?
Netflix.
Okay.
A researcher goes around the world to find out all the miraculous ways that we're connected. I thought this was going to be one of those spiritual type of things. You know, unsolved mysteries, mother over here gets a pain in her wrist while her daughter gets... in a car accident. I thought it was going to be something like that.
Yeah.
Instead, what it is each episode, I've only watched the first one. The first one was on surveillance. So each episode has a theme, and then he does multiple little stories, and each one of them kind of leads to the next one. So like in the first episode, he talks about this guy who studies and tags these birds, this one particular type of bird. And he's discovered that when the birds head south, they go from Delaware to Brazil.
Sure.
And when they do that, depending on when they do it in the year, determines hurricane season, how strong it's going to be. So, like, he used the 2018 year where the almanac said, or the meteorologist said, it's going to be a mild hurricane season. But the birds beat feet south early. And he's like, it's going to be harsh. And it was fine. And then September we got, shit.
Yeah.
So he talks about that, and he talks about, you know, tracking them and the movements and stuff. And then his next part of the story goes into facial recognition technology being used on pigs to keep track of the, like, on a pig farm, how there are hundreds or thousands of pigs and it's hard to keep track of them other than with ear tags. Well, they're teaching facial technology to recognize the pigs so that they can keep track of them better. And they're even teaching it to detect moods in pigs so that they can have happier pigs, which produce tastier meat. Which then leads into the part about facial recognition being used by the FBI and the CIA and profilers, you know, that Lie to Me show.
Yeah.
And he's showing how the technology works, but also that a lot of the databases that are built for these facial recognition type things are your pictures. So if you've ever put anything up on Facebook or Instagram or something like that, chances are your picture is in one of these databases. And
doesn't surprise me. Fucking Facebook uses facial recognition when you upload a photo. It's like, hey, is this your friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is creepoy, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. The other day, my D&D group, we were like, hey, you know, something happened. And they were like, hey, how about if we all swap phone numbers just in case this happens again and we can do that? I put 3 new phone numbers in my phone. The next time I opened Instagram, it was like, hey, you might like these 3 people. And it was those 3. Same thing with Facebook. Oh, you might like these people.
Because they put their phone numbers in Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. Well, or Facebook and Instagram is owned by Facebook. So.
Exactly. So then it goes from the facial recognition to dating apps and talking about how you have desirability factors. This one woman was on Tinder off and on, and she called them up and said, I want to know about my desirability score, because they have secret algorithms in the back.
Sure.
That basically, if an attractive person swipes left on you, your attractiveness goes down. Because a pretty person doesn't want to date you, so you must be ugly.
Yeah.
So you can actually, then you will only see people who are in your range. And so she talked to Tinder, and they were like,
sorry, that's like horseshit to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So she talked to Tinder, and she was like, I want my data, and they were like, it's our intellectual property. We do all that stuff. So she went and argued with them for a while, and finally they sent her the file. Over 100 pages of paper that was everything about her. Like, and it was porn searches, it was shopping habits, it was everything that she has ever done online.
Yeah, that surprised me.
So it was interesting how it started off with birds and ended up with porn searches.
Well, it's
everything
like,
turns into porn.
It's like when you go on Amazon and you look something up, like, oh, do I want to buy this, or how much is this, or blah, blah. And then next thing you know, oh, you're getting the ads on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Any place you go with an ad, it pops up because, oh, you know, your computer knows you looked at this. So, hey, don't forget, you looked at this once. Like, it's just...
I like the emails that say, hey, are you still looking? What do you mean, am I still looking?
Yeah.
Well, you were looking at this item the other day. Have you made your mind up? I made my mind up. I don't want your fucking emails.
Yeah. I have been dumping so many emails. Like, if I get an unsolicited email, I automatically go and unsubscribe or whatever. It's like, people don't do this, but when you get an unsolicited phone call, like, hey, this is your insurance company. Call me about your insurance.
God.
Option 9. If it's a recording, listen to the whole recording. A lot of times it'll say, hey, push 9 to be taken off our list. But most people don't listen to the recording. They just hang up.
The last two that I did was option 2.
Okay, see, so it's different, but just listen to the recording, and then, or I wait for a person to come on. If it's a person, I say, please remove me from your list. Because if not, they're going to keep calling.
Mm-hmm.
You just hang up on it or ignore it, they're just going to keep calling.
Yep.
I noticed, like, U.S. Cellular launched a thing, and I think this, like, the first couple months are free, but they basically charge you a fee now if you want unsolicited phone calls to not come in. Well, that's horse shit.
Verizon doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just part of their service.
But the phone will ring and it'll go probable spam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, potential, like my most recent one is this is potential spam. And I was like, all right. So I listened to it and it was a Donald Trump campaign recording. So I laughed and then hung up.
Awesome.
We watched the new show together, but separately.
Yep.
Bit Players. PLAYAS. This was recommended to us.
Which was very interesting because I don't want to read it, but we actually got an unsolicited email.
Yeah.
For the first time ever. Somebody actually said, hey, we produced this show.
Yeah.
We'd love it if you guys checked it out for your podcast. I mean, this was beyond just like somebody saying, hey, I think you'd like this.
Right.
This was somebody who actually built this show and said, hey, feature it on your podcast. Fuck yeah.
Well... So I watched it, like I forwarded it to you and everything, and then it was one of those like, well, if I like it, I will. Mm-hmm. I watch it, I don't like it, I'm not going to talk about it. Because mm-hmm. what good is it to come in and talk about and bury it?
Right.
That doesn't do any good.
Right.
It's like, hey, these people asked us to watch the show because they're really proud of their accomplishment. Fucking suck.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, we're going to go on there and be like, don't ever fuck it.
No. So I watched it, and the episodes are short, it's like 20 minutes.
Oh, not even that, it was like 17.
Yeah, and it's on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
There's 8 episodes, it's a Canadian show for the CBC. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, I did too.
My wife watched it with me, she did too.
Two friends who are roommates, they've been friends for a while, that created this show.
Yeah,
and
it stars Nigel Downer, and I'm going to murder this name, Chris Siddiqui?
Sure.
Siddiqui. It's essentially about their lives.
Yeah.
Because if you go on IMDb and you look up their history of TV shows or whatever they've been on, they play roles like the Upset Man number 2.
Yeah.
Or Hopkins or, you know, Turnup. Or like they're not playing leading roles.
Right.
You know?
Thug number 4.
Yeah.
Taxi Driver.
And they're basically, you know, they're two best friends that live together. They call each other lover. They kissed once. I don't know if they're actually together.
Yeah, they don't really spell that out.
Yeah, which is fine. It's ambiguous.
Yeah.
But they like to sit around, maybe smoke some pot, play video games for hours. Nigel, he's black. And Chris Siddiqui there, he's Indian, right? So they base the fact that, like, Nigel's an actor trying to get a role, and it opens with him going for an audition. And basically, the PR guy, gave me like, hey, so I think you're doing great, but the producers of the show, they want it to be more urban.
Yeah.
You know, can you try and do it more urban? And one of the things my wife and I both liked about it is like when Nigel gets into character,
mm-hmm.
and when he's doing the scene, it's not just him standing there in the room doing the scene. They actually cut to like
the scene.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of like what Zach Braff would do on Scrubs, you know?
Yeah. So it's like he is actually acting the scene out, and there's it's as we see it happening, you know.
He has the do-rag on. He's like, yo, this chicken is great, yo.
And what this really reminded me of, and it's, I don't know if it's funny or if it's not funny or ironic, but this show came out in 2019. Mm-hmm. 32 years earlier, there was a movie called Hollywood Shuffle. Did you ever watch that?
I did not.
Okay. It's a satirical comedy by written and directed and produced by Robert Townsend. He was Meteor Man. Okay. Mm-hmm. I remember, so in 87, I was 8 years old, so I was probably 9 or 10 the first time I watched this, and I rented it at the store in front of my house. And basically, it's about Keenan Ivory Wayans is also in it. He also co-wrote it. I think Damon Wayans is in it. John Witherspoon. There's a cast you'd recognize, like, oh. But basically, the whole point of it is he is a black man trying to make it in Hollywood, but he's running into casting directors that can be more black.
Yeah.
Just be more, you know, stick your ass out more. And basically, the only roles you can get as a black man is as a slave, a servant, or a pimp. And there's like sketches throughout the movie. There's an overwhelming story, but there's really great sketches. Like there's a section called Sneak It Into the Movies, where him and his buddy do like the Siskel and Ebert type thing, where they sit there and they watch a clip from a movie, and then they talk shit about it or whatever, or they say they love it or whatever it is. There's another sketch where him and his girlfriend are sitting there watching like an old noir film, detective film, and it's in black and white, and now he's imagining himself in it, so you see him going through that. There's another bit called Black Acting School, where basically, you know, like this guy's like, yeah, you know, I've been a thug, I've been a serial killer, hey, I even played a rapist twice, that was fun, like, you know, things like that, where it's like in Black Act you can learn to be a slave, you can learn to be, you know, this and that. And he's trying to get this role in this movie where he's playing a pimp. And it's ironic to me because this movie made in 87, the things he's complaining about it, the stereotyping that's done and how only black people get to be these roles, these guys are talking about in 2019.
Because it's still a thing.
30 years later, it's still a thing. And so that's the first thing I immediately thought of was Hollywood Shuffle. If you haven't seen it, you should absolutely check it out. It's a, I'm not going to say it's a classic, but to me it is, because I watched it so many times when I was a kid.
But they definitely played up, like, that was one of the points they were trying to get across. They also wanted to get the point across that, you know, playing video games sucks time out of your life. Because it really does. But, yeah, so Nigel gets a call from his agent. He's like, you know, she says, oh, there's the role that's perfect for you. It's Thug Number 4.
It's in the McG movie. He's like, McG movie? Yeah, Thug Number 4. Dead silence. Yeah. Really?
So he goes home to tell his roommate about it. His roommate's just like,
Ahmed.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I already know about it because she called here first. I'm going to the audition, too. And he's like, but you're not an actor. He goes, how hard can it be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I told her I could do that shit. And she's like, really? Why don't you try it? What, she's representing you like that? It took me months to get her to represent me. Like, everything that Leon in the show has struggled to do and overcome, like, Ahmed's just getting it like it's that.
Yep. Which, again, is another comment on that kind of. So I loved when they showed up there, and basically, like, there are a bunch of black men sitting there. You could tell that they're there for the thug role.
Yeah.
And then the two white girls behind the counter, you know, they got no time for these two, and they're just like, yeah, whatever. And they're like, oh, you, to the roommate, they're like, oh, you must be here for the taxi driver role. And they point him over to the other Indian-looking guys.
Yeah.
And I love the way that he goes over there, and he, like, puts his arm out, and he goes, everybody.
First the guy comes out, and he goes, how'd it go, man? Not brown enough. Oh, that sucks. And he leaves, and then.
So he goes over and he puts his arm. He goes, everybody, arms in, arms in. They all, like, put their arms in. He goes, okay, you have to be at least as brown as me in order to be for the role. So you two, you're too white. Get out. They don't want you. And they're just like, oh, man.
And the other, and then he talks shit about him.
Yep.
And the other guy's like, yeah.
Yep.
And then, of course, Leon goes in and blows his audition because he doesn't want to be a bit player. He doesn't want to be the stereotypical thug. He wants to do it intelligently. You know, he wants to, you know, he did Macbeth.
He wants to be an actor.
The casting director didn't even see, or he did Hamlet. The casting director didn't even seem like, didn't give a shit about, oh, you did Hamlet. Yeah, I played, that's great. You know, like that type of thing. So he kind of blows it. And then Ahmed goes in and just kills it.
Because
he does over the top, says fuck at least 70 times.
Yep.
And gets the part. So, and that's kind of how the episode ends. So I'm actually anxious to watch another episode.
I am too.
Yeah.
But I'm slow playing it. I know that they're short episodes. We can binge it in like one night.
Oh, easily. We can go binge it after we get done talking, recording this.
Right. But this is a fun show.
Yeah.
It is definitely recommended. Topical, you know?
Yes.
Like you said, especially in this time period right now where it's still very relevant.
Well, and again, if you go watch Hollywood Shuffle and then you watch this, you'll just be like, there's a lot of similarities. Now, granted, this is 80s comedy, 2019 comedy, but like the things that...
The issues are still the same.
The issues are still the same, yeah. Typecasting, stereotyping. I mean, what's the biggest joke you ever see in any horror movie is you have the token black guy and he dies first.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do I talk about next?
I've got to say, this... No, I'm going to save that.
Okay.
Let's finish up with the new shows.
Oh, new shows?
Yeah.
Muppets Now?
Muppets Now.
So that was interesting. It's basically you have Kermit and Scooter kind of doing a Teams talk or a Google meeting or whatever you want, whichever online video chat thing you're using. And they've already filmed these bits and Scooter's uploading them.
Yep.
And we see three bits. We get a bunch of different celebrities in them.
Mm-hmm.
We get Miss Piggy's show, it's supposed to be pig, I don't know if it's supposed to be pig style, but it says pig sty. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
We get Swedish Chef cooking.
Oh my god, I love that so much.
Yeah.
Cause you had an actual chef on there and she's giving cooking. And he just mashed everything together. It was so great.
And then at the end, when his didn't work out and he's paying for delivery, the chef appears to be paying for a delivery of his food, you know? And
yeah. And then he just stacked his food into the delivery food. It was priceless.
And then we got Kermit interviewing RuPaul and Gonzo kind of coming out and taking it over with everybody else.
Gonzo and then one of the pigs and then Miss Piggy and then Fozzie and...
I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I did too.
Yeah.
It felt like the Muppet Show.
It did. I love the original Muppet Show. And people could say, well, it was on when you were a kid, so you probably get the rose-colored glasses. No, because I watch it now and it's still great.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the dentist, they have a DVD player hooked to a TV. They don't have cable. All they have is the fucking Muppet Show Time Life Treasury discs. One disc.
Poor people.
Yeah.
You have to watch that all the time. I mean, the Muppets are great, but anything.
Well, I see. Usually it's not on when I get there, so I put it in, and I'll watch. I'll rotate.
And they're like, you son of a bitch.
Basically. The Mark Hamill episode, the Carol Burnett episode, they still hold up today, in my opinion.
Of course they do.
But Muppets Tonight, I watched it. Wasn't that great.
No, because they tried to make it into something that the Muppets are not.
Right. The Muppets Tonight was not the most recent one, Miss Piggy. The Muppets Tonight was one from years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. And then the new Miss Piggy one, it was okay. But again, it wasn't the Muppet Show.
Mm-hmm.
It was even like the new Muppet movies. The first one with Jason Segel was great. Mm-hmm. Second one, this new Muppets Now, so far, first episode, great episode.
Yep.
I look forward to it.
Yep, because again, it felt like a Muppet Show.
Your suggestion... I did watch the first episode of the new Transformers series.
The War for Cybertron.
And I will say this. I went into watching this with no hope for being any good.
Because they said that it's an anime. Not liking it
and being disappointed with it.
Yep. And that's exactly how I went into it. I was like, how are they going to butcher my Transformers?
Yep.
Because they say it's an anime. Are you fucking kidding me? An anime? I mean, I know the Transformers came out of Japan. We all saw the documentary, The Toys That Made Us.
Yep. It wasn't traditional anime, though.
No.
It was more like Voltron anime.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Different take on the series. Different take on the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Autobots against the Decepticons and the... And
if anything, it's a prequel to the original animated series.
Yes. Bumblebee is not an Autobot. He's a freelancer.
Yep.
Prime is a shitty fighter.
You get the sense that Prime, was a pampered...
Yeah. The Decepticons, in our world, to relate it to us, to our history, the Autobots are the North, the Decepticons are the South, the Civil War.
Except the Decepticons won. They've pretty much taken over.
Right, but that's what I mean, but when you watch it...
Oh, for ideals?
For ideals, that's yes. Kind of, but then you watch this, and the Decepticons are winning the war, mm-hmm. and
Yeah, that's a big, like, moment that you just did.
Well,
where the Decepticons, the Autobots are always striving to stop the Decepticons, but the Decepticons are always seem to have the upper hand on the Autobots.
Yes. I was going to say, if you remember the animated series,
yeah.
the Decepticons were winning the war, and the Autobots fled to Earth, and the Decepticons followed them.
Yeah.
The movie, the one that matters, the animated movie, not the fucking Michael Bay pieces of
shit.
But the animated movie, same thing.
Yeah.
Like, the Autobots were on the two moons of Cybertron because the Decepticons took over Cybertron.
Right.
Like, the Decepticons always seem to win.
Yeah, they do. But ideally, but so when Megatron is doing his big speech, everyone on Cybertron's cheering their heads off.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It felt almost like feudal Japan at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I could see a little bit of the anime influence there where he's like, you know, we will overcome and we will make Cybertron a better place. He's not looking to enslave these people. He wants his ideals met.
Now, there were some other issues I had with it.
Yeah.
There's some other characters that they had on the show that doesn't follow suit with it being a prequel to the original series.
How so?
Ultra Magnus.
Okay, yeah.
He was not in the original series. He was not into the movie.
And he looks like a traitor at the end of the first episode.
Yeah, he does. Also, Bumblebee's not an Autobot. And then the giant jet.
Jetfire?
Jetfire. He's a Decepticon in this.
That makes perfect sense.
So that makes perfect sense because he becomes an Autobot later on when he's found on Earth. But he's the leader of the
Seekers.
Yep. Which is all these identical-looking Starscream.
Which, that's what they were. It was Thundercracker, Skywarp, Starscream, and then they added some other ones in just for flavor.
Yeah. And then there's a female Autobot. It's not RC.
Nope.
But there's a female Autobot we've never seen before. Yeah, that we've never seen before. Because really, there was no female Autobots in Transformers the movie.
Right. But we've got this one, and then we've got at least one more that's kind of like walking around in the background when they're in that. But yeah, the Autobots are essentially getting their asses kicked.
Yeah.
They're out of energon, so they can't really heal up. They're scavenging for parts.
They're dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sick bay is them basically laying there like, we can't do anything.
They're powering down, if you will. Yeah. I actually really, really liked it.
I did too.
I was intrigued by it. I kind of wanted to watch more.
I know. Like, I came to the end of it, and I'm like, fuck, I kind of want to binge this.
But, yeah.
But yeah, it really felt good.
Because the She-Ra is garbage, in my opinion.
Yeah, no.
And I don't have much hope for the He-Man one.
No. But I was surprised by this.
Yeah.
I still don't think I'd call it an anime if I was describing it.
No, I wouldn't. Because when I think of anime, I think of, like, Sailor Moon anime. Or Pokemon, you know.
Bleach or,
I don't.
Attack on Titan. I would call this a dark animated show.
Yeah. Attack on Titan's a very fucking dark animated show. Jeez.
True. Fair point.
But, I mean, as far as stylistically, colors, girls with the giant eyes, I mean, the stereotypicalness that you see.
Right.
And here's the other thing. This is my one big flaw that I noticed in the first episode. When they're running away from the Decepticons, they're running away. They did not transform into vehicles and drive away faster than they can run, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there. And it doesn't make sense that they are the vehicles they are because they haven't been to Earth as far as we know. So how would they know to duplicate them?
Yeah, but you notice that they had, like, their own Cybertronian twists on things. Like, Megatron was a tank.
Yes.
The Seekers were not F-16s. They were, like, the space shuttle jet types, you know?
Yes,
so I like that they had that twist on things.
Let's see, so we got
two things left.
S.H.I.E.L.D. to talk about. We got Dark to talk about. And we got the Return of the Umbrella Academy to talk about.
Damn.
So, S.H.I.E.L.D.?
S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right.
We've got like one episode left of this.
Nah, I think there's more than that.
You start talking, I'll look it up.
All right. So, this week in S.H.I.E.L.D., it kind of, it picks up where it left off, essentially, from last week.
Right, but it's no longer a time loop, so now we've actually just
Yes, they're stuck in time. They're not stuck in time, but they are in, what year is it?
80s.
80s, yeah.
It's like 86 or something like that.
So we get a lot of, this is three more episodes. We get a lot of Nathaniel Grant, and the last two episodes are going to air on the same day. So we only got two more weeks to show. Well, this week and next.
So Nathaniel Grant recruits John Garrett.
Yeah, this was great.
Shows him his future.
Great pull.
Yep, shows him his future. And also he talks about his perfected way of translating a inhuman's powers to him. He also picks up... What else did he pick up besides Garrett?
No, he had that one unnamed thug that was taking the guy who could create knives out of thin air.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was just...
I thought he was another guy we knew.
No, not really.
Well, he gives Garrett Gordon's powers.
Yeah.
And Gordon dies after, so he's dead.
But Gordon wasn't dead until he used his powers one more
time. That's true, that's true. He used his powers one more time to get him and Coulson out of the room they were in, and then he died.
Yep.
S.H.I.E.L.D. wants Jiang to stay with them at the lighthouse for protection. Daisy
kind of has a heart-to-heart with her based on Seuss's recommendation, but...
it doesn't say, yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't tell her, you're my mom. She talks about, you know, I never knew my mom.
Yeah.
And when I finally met her, she tried to hurt me, and...
Daisy finds about her half-sister Cora she never knew, and it was basically like, May's like, yeah, well, it's been busy. And May was trying to tell her when Jiang showed up.
Yeah.
Because the second they transmitted the coordinates to the watch they gave her, her and Gordon showed up immediately.
Yep.
And she finds out about Cora, and they basically say, well, you wouldn't have known about Cora because you're dead. She was dead before you were born.
She committed suicide.
Right.
In the original time.
Exactly. Because Nathaniel Garrett wasn't there to stop her from killing herself.
Whitehall.
That's what I meant, Whitehall. Jesus Christ. So Whitehall and Garrett show up at the lighthouse. And basically, you know, Whitehall and Daisy and her mom. She's like, oh, that's your daughter. Oh, you didn't know? Blah, blah, blah.
Has the little villain moment.
Yeah.
And then they're going to quake out each other.
Yeah. And then because he kills Jiang.
Yeah.
Tries to suck his powers out and he kills her.
Because they all thought that that's who he was there for, because that's what Hydra did originally, was ripped her apart to find out her immortality secret.
But Hydra isn't what Hydra was anymore in this timeline.
There's so much that's fucked with this timeline. Yeah. Like they said, Jiang's dead now. Daisy should not exist.
Well, okay, so I read a thing today. I read a thing today that Daisy is no... No, they're going by... The reason why Deke is still around, because he's a person that's misplaced in time, but he still exists, even if he doesn't... Even though he's not in his timeline.
Yep.
So Daisy is still existing, but now she essentially doesn't exist in the S.H.I.E.L.D. timeline.
Gotcha.
Unless they change something by the end of the episode, end of the season. So if she doesn't exist in the S.H.I.E.L.D. timeline, then she never basically gets involved with S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, to begin with. So does that change all that? I mean, there's
They basically have to go back and destroy the Chronicoms before they try to do all this shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit going on with the timeline that is fucked, that, like, basically on Dark they ignore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That on this show they don't ignore.
Shit.
Yeah. But they're there to grab Simmons.
Yep.
And they grab Simmons and they take off and they steal the Zephyr.
Yeah.
When they sell, like,
because Garrett's like, you know, oh, first I get teleport powers, now I get a spaceship. This is the best day ever.
They steal the Zephyr, but they don't know Deke's on board.
Because he's listening to his Star-Lord 1980s.
Yeah, exactly. And they took Simmons because he wants to know where Fitz is.
Well, basically, he says every timeline in which we fail is because of Fitz.
Yeah.
So we need to get him out of the picture.
Now, but also Simmons is thinking, because Daisy basically says, look, there was something wrong. When you took the thing out, you remembered something. You were distraught. You were devastated. You were crushed because you remembered something, and then we jumped.
Yep.
And the long and the short of that part of it is, so Simmons starts to think that maybe Fitz is dead, because she was like, you know, we always thought Fitz was controlling where we were jumping from where he was. But maybe it was the Chronicroms that were controlling it, and Fitz wasn't controlling at all, so maybe Fitz has been dead this whole time. Maybe that's what she was upset about.
Right.
Or maybe she was upset, like you said, or someone else said, like, she left Fitz, or...
Right.
Whatever it is.
I think she left him in hell, because they were going to have the Ghost Rider thing, but...
Maybe, maybe not. We got 3 episodes to find out.
Yeah.
This has been the best season of S.H.I.E.L.D. in my
opinion. Absolutely.
And I get it. They took 6 seasons to get us here, because they had to build everything up, describe everything, set everything in motion.
Because, like, Garrett wouldn't have meant anything to us unless we had all that Bill Paxton shit.
Yes.
And all the, you know, Ward turning out to be a double agent, and the interplay of Hydra, and then learning what an asshole Garrett was. Now he made him shoot his dog. You know, we had to build all that up so many seasons ago so that now when we see him, we go, oh, I fucking hate this guy even more.
Yeah.
Like, the actor that they got did a great job of playing a cocky prick.
Oh, massively.
The 80s ski lodge villain. Like, he was such a villain.
My dad is the banker, and he's going to steal a ski lodge and develop it.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I thought it was good. Dark?
Sure. Holy fuck. Yeah, this is exhausting. In a good way.
Yeah.
But holy shit. Two episodes, the first two episodes of the second season, and like you said, they kind of threw a lot of established time travel rules right out the fucking window.
Yeah, like, time has passed from the first season to the second season. And so now it's 2020 instead of 2019, and it's 2053 instead of 2052.
June 21st. And they're very specific about that because the apocalypse is going to happen in 6 days.
27, yeah.
But what's really interesting is that we get two different title cards during this episode that say June 21st, 2020, 6 days until the apocalypse. And then we get one that says June 21st, 1987, six days until the apocalypse. It wasn't happening back, or 86. It wasn't happening in 86. But...
Well, it had to say 87 because we're a year ahead on everything.
Right. So is this the type of apocalyptic thing that is going to affect all of the timelines?
Probably.
Like, instead of it just being a nuclear war, this is like time itself is going to be erased.
Probably. So it starts up in 1921, and we get two guys building the passage into the cave that's going to be used as the portal. And
fucking with us right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
These two.
Yeah, because one of them is a young Noah.
Yep.
And basically, the guy he's working with has lost his faith.
Yep.
So he pickaxed him to death.
Which, I thought that the guy that got pickaxed was Noah at first.
Me too.
Because he's got the tattoo on his chest.
But his tattoo's on his chest, not on his back.
True.
Noah's is on his back, because I fell for the same thing.
Yep. Now, let me just preface this, because this is going to come up a lot. But there are plenty of times in this show where an older version of a person goes and talks to their younger version like it's no fucking deal.
It's crazy.
We actually have a point where Noah is talking, that Noah, that we know, the priest, is talking to this young kid and consoling him and being like, you did what you had to do. We're on the right path now. No harm, no foul.
Yep.
You know, I'm you from the future.
In 2020, 6 days before the apocalypse, a new investigator named Clausen showed up to help Charlotte with this investigation. The people are pissed. Rightfully so, because nothing's been solved.
In 6 months, 8 people have disappeared.
Yeah.
And I liked how that one guy was like, you know what? They send us one guy. This was supposed to be a task force. And his logic is, if you have 10 different people looking at an elephant from 10 different angles, they're all going to give you a different description. But if you have one person who looks from all 10 different angles, he'll give you the complete story.
Yeah. And well, if I need an elephant found, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is even funnier to hear it in German.
Yeah. And the disappearance include, like, 8 people, like you said, because now we have posters for Helgi, Jonas, and Ulrich.
As well as old, what's his name there?
Helgi.
Yeah, sorry.
Catherine searching the cave. Martha breaks up with Barto.
And we find out that Katerina's been searching the caves regularly, and she's kind of gone a little crazy.
Yeah.
Because her kids kind of mentioned, they're like, that's why she's down in those caves every day.
Right. Looking for Ulrich.
Yep.
Because Barto is working with Noah now.
Yep.
The stranger, now adult Jonas from the future, goes to his mom. He's like, hey, I'm your son.
Yeah.
Basically proves to her why.
Yeah, he tells her the story about the bike and the scar that he got and blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, I want you to come with me because I could tell you about Dad's secret, but I'd rather just show you.
Yeah. And then Alexander takes a big truck of radioactive waste and moves it to the power plant. The one that had been sitting out by
Because
we find out that the one-eyed guy, who had like a cloth over his eye the whole time, now he's got an eye patch. We know he lost his eye.
No.
Okay. The transvestite prostitute, that's his brother.
Yep.
So
I think it's actually transgender because
remember,
she said that she's been giving hormone therapy.
Yes.
And her dad used to pay for his visits with the hormone therapy, but now that he can't do that anymore,
she's selling him the pills. Yeah. That might have been in the second episode, but who cares?
Right, right.
But now we're seeing the police force. There's a guy in the police force who's on the inside who's working for Alexander for the nuclear plant that's being decommissioned in a few days as well.
Which is when the apocalypse happens.
And then in 2053, we get Jonas, who's still stuck there. He plans... Okay, so the adult Elizabeth, the deaf girl,
yeah,
who does sign language that we have from, she's now there. She's like kind
of... One eye's blind, she's deaf.
She's ruling the future people. And basically it's
how
like...
How does that happen?
Who knows? But basically it's like, look, if you go, anyone that enters the power plant area that's fenced off or Whitten, you're put to death. That's the rules.
Yeah.
And we see that right away when she kills two people.
Yeah.
Hangs a couple people. Not like the good hanging where they kicked a chair off her, and if you know, the... Put a noose on your neck, and then other people lift you off the ground, and you slowly strangle yourself. Strangled.
It's like a pulley system, so the first guy goes up, and then as he reaches a certain point, it catches, and the second guy goes up.
It's
yeah. But Jonas won't be dissuaded, because he's been scavenging computer parts. He's found some old... this was very interesting. He's found some old recordings.
Yes.
Talking about...
It's Claudia, I believe.
It's Claudia.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, because up until this point, she was just like the chief of police type person or an investigator. And her dad's the one who created that. You know, we saw that in 1951 or 53, where her dad is the one who created the time travel box and wrote the book.
Right.
So she got that in.
No, Claudia's the one that brought him the thing to make the box. To make the book. To make the fucking time travel box. Right?
No.
Isn't Claudia like Bartol's grandmother? And she talks to her younger, her dog was Gretchen.
No, that's Regina. Or Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Charlotte is the... Okay.
See? This is what this fucking show does to me.
Fucking Claudia Tiedelman and... Jesus Christ. Yeah, pardon us, folks. We gotta do this again.
Hey, it happens.
There's Claudia and Charlotte. Charlotte is the car.
Yeah. Claudia is Regina's mother, who's the director of the power plant.
Yes. And who's also the old woman.
She's Jonas and Noah's mentor, and she's Egon and Doris's daughter and Helgi's tutor. She's the little girl that had the dog, and then she goes to talk to herself because she's running the power plant. It's like, yeah, that's our dog.
So she's been recording these things, talking about how they discovered the God particle and how they can do this and they can do this. But it seems that the recordings were made back in Jonas's time, right before the apocalypse.
Yes, yes.
So something happened in there because... Yep. And again, we're meshing these episodes together, but yeah, so he's listening to those, and he seems to find a way to, because we finally get to see this anomaly.
Yeah, this floating sphere with light and black, and it's just kind of floating around, and he's trying to figure out a way to activate it, and these tapes are helping him.
Yep, and he has these little dishes set up, and when he powers them on, it actually solidifies into a sphere and sinks down, but then it runs out of gas.
Yes. So episode two...
Which I'm sure we missed some stuff, but holy fuck, this show is dense.
1987, Michael, whatever, he's having a hard time dealing with being in 87. He's been there 6 months, and as is his guardian, he's trying to deal with it, but he's struggling. Claudia, old Claudia, visits her younger self to let her know about time travel and say, hey, this is our dog. And hey, this is what time, he tells her about time travel, and even gives her coordinates where to dig up the time travel thing. So then we see Claudia going back to the 1950s, to old Claudia, to bury it, and what is this sign, the future home of this development, and then 1987, Claudia is digging it out of the ground. So she has the time machine now.
No, it's not 87 Claudia.
Yeah.
No, because 87 Claudia was the one who met, what's his name? Wasn't it?
No.
Fuck.
Old Claudia, the old gray-haired lady, she's one that had the time machine built.
Yeah.
She goes to her younger self, their dog, Gretchen. She has the...
Because she was a kid then, so in 87 she was the adult running the plant.
Yes. Yes. But then she goes back in time to bury it.
Yeah.
You know, to bury it so that 33 years later, this Claudia is going to dig it out of the ground right after their meeting.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
And so now the old one is stuck back in 53 unless she goes through the tunnels.
I'm sure she can, yeah, I'm sure she has a way to move.
Yeah. But it was important that she go back there and bury it.
Bury it, yes. Egon, and this is in 87, is retired. He's got cancer.
Which Ulrich had already known because it was in the papers that he had died.
He's starting to doubt himself about the dead bodies from 53, the two kids from the future that ended up in the past.
Yep.
So he interviews Helgi again about it. And we'll finally interview Helgi because he didn't interview him the first time when Mikkel disappeared. Or no, when, not Mikkel, but when Mads disappeared.
Right.
So he interviews him, and then he goes to the psychiatric facility because when he calls and goes, hey, whatever happened to the suspect in the kid's disappearance? What? No, we can't still be around. So he goes to a fucking psychiatric center, and there's old Ulrich.
Yeah.
And he's still there.
Yeah.
And
looking a little gaunt.
Yep.
Got some long gray hair. And basically, Ulrich tells him to fuck off. He's like, you're going to be dead in a couple of days, huh?
Yeah, you got a couple of days till you die, right? Yeah, well, if you still don't get it now, then I guess you'll never fucking get it.
That's right. You're still clueless. See ya.
Yep. In 2020, 5 days before the apocalypse, Clausen and Charlotte are talking to Regina, who has breast cancer.
Yeah.
She's the one that owns the hotel. Mm-hmm. She's the one that got accused of that... by Ulrich and Katarina for saying that she raped, that they raped.
Way better.
Because her dad was a police officer.
Yeah.
She talks about the stranger who was there and left his belongings and asked me to deliver this box to Jonas.
But not the box that's on her table because she says he wanted me to keep the room, but he never showed back up.
Yeah.
And they start going through and looking at all the papers and everything that were pinned to the wall.
Right.
And that's when Charlotte recognizes that these are excerpts from my dad's book.
Yeah. And she also, she was raised by Tadas. And so she starts questioning her origins. Is this really my dad?
Right.
What the fuck's going on? Also, the adult Jonas tells Hannah about time travel again and takes her to 1987 to find Mikkel in Ez's house.
And which, so, now she can put two and two together and say, wait, that's Mikkel who disappeared. I remember him as the kid that I fell in love with and married.
Got married and had you, and he killed himself.
Yeah.
And now she's right. But it's funny how, like, her brain didn't recognize him as Mikkel when Mikkel was around, when they were together there, but now in 2019, but now she's recognizing him.
Why would you?
Right.
I mean, think about it.
You would like, think, well, that looks like my husband when we met as kids.
Exactly,
like,
would.
And then in 2053, Jonas learns via the recordings from Claudia about the guard particle, like we talked about. He has to go get fuel, but he gets caught by Elizabeth, who's going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, she spares him for whatever reason. We don't know why,
right?
But she shoots the noose out so he doesn't die. But basically, he's like, she's lying to you. There's nothing beyond that wall that, you know, there's no, you know. He basically says she's lying and is about to say what's going to happen when she kicks the, who goes to hang him and then saves him. So
I like that some of these people, by the way, the stranger is still in IMDb as the stranger.
Yeah.
I like that they don't call him old Jonas.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm very interested because the girl that he takes into the area, you know, she's like,
Celia. Oh. Yeah.
Well, no, she's listed in here as girl from the future.
Yeah. Well, her name's Celia.
Oh, okay.
She's Elizabeth's interpreter.
Yes.
She's like, seems the only one that can understand her.
Yep.
She's like, now she doubts Elizabeth because she didn't kill Jonas, and that's always been the thing. And so she's like, I want you to show me what's going on. I want you to show me why did she spare you. And he's like, fine, I will. So they go into the dead zone, and Jonas activates the guard particle, and he walks through it. She's like, you're not going in there, are you? And he's like, yeah.
I can either die here, or I can go in there and try to go back and die there.
And that's how it kind of ends. He steps through, and it goes back to a spinning ball because it runs out of gas. And so, but I think you're going to see she's probably going to get some more gas to start it up.
Yep.
So.
Holy crap, this show.
It's great, but it's funny because when I watch it, I don't feel overwhelmed and confused. It's just when I go to sit here and talk to you about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of it is the names, and part of it is just, it's crazy. Because again, you're not talking about about Regina. You're talking about three different versions of Regina, for instance.
Right.
Or, you know, this is Katarina, but this is 1986 Katarina, and this is 2017 Katarina, or 2019 Katarina,
right,
which is now 2020 Katarina.
And unfortunately, I don't recognize their voices when it's on a recording all the time.
Right.
You know, it's hard, or, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's just, and then when you jump from time to time, it's like, wait, who is this again? Oh, yeah, that's right, it's... Because it's not the same actor playing the same people at different ages. They have different actors, which is great because it's more believable. But,
whew. Yeah.
So the Umbrella Academy came back.
Yes.
It's all yours, sir.
Dude. So first off, they did what I wanted them to, which was a recap of the first season. And they did it in the most perfect Umbrella Academy way because they basically had the kids talk about it,
yes,
and offer their own little insights, and they're like, oh yeah, that happened, oh, that sucked,
yeah.
And it was just, it was a great recap. It was like 2 minutes long. Loved it.
I think my favorite part of that recap was like, who the hell knew that Vanya had was like the superpowered one of all of us? Will you guys just let it go?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then, just like with the first season, well, no, even better than the first season, so we knew that at the end of the first season they warped out.
Yeah.
You know, they did a teleport thing. We get to watch each of them get dropped off in the exact same spot on the exact same street. However, they're months or years apart from
each
other.
Yes, yes.
You know, and it all takes place over, you know, I think it's like 5 years in the 60s, like 62 to 67 or something.
3 years.
3 years. Okay.
60 to 63.
That's right.
Yeah.
And basically, they're all stranded here, but none of them ever run into each other. So we get to see them all drop off. When number five finally pops out, he's grabbed by, shit, what was his name?
Oh, well, when five comes out, he sees that, like, the apocalypse has happened. The Russians have invaded Texas.
It was the greatest opening scene.
And you see the siblings all working together to fight the communists.
Oh, yeah. Diego's up there, and he's, like, throwing shit out. He's got a beard and everything like that. And Luther blocks a fucking blast from a tank.
Yeah.
Like, just doosh, right across his back. Vanya's in control of her powers.
You see the ghost one.
Yep.
You know, killing people. But Hazel. Hazel shows
That's
up.
The name,
yeah, Hazel shows up
as an old man
and grabs five. Oh, an older guy, yeah, and grabs five. It's been for him. It's been 20 years because, as he tells us, yeah, I got married and she got sick and we had twenty great years together before she died, and we weren't meant to be together forever, apparently.
But he was happy and she was happy, so you know that's what counts. But basically, he tries to tell him, he's like, you know, it's a new apocalypse.
Yeah,
and things are fucked. But then we get these three Aryan-looking guys.
Well, before that, because what happens is he goes, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but he's like, we need to get out of here. He's like, I got to save my family. He's like, you can't save them if you're dead. Because see those, buddy? Those are nukes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so they jump out to 10 days prior to this.
Yep.
And we see nukes go off and eviscerate everybody.
Yep.
And then, now they're talking and they're having a story. And that's when these three... As it says, apparently they're Swedish.
Okay.
But three assassins show up.
Tall, blonde, blue-eyed guys. And, they gun Hazel down.
Yeah.
And I love that Five is still snarky about things. You know, like, he grabs the briefcase from Hazel, and he's carrying it, and then it's all shot up, and he's like, how many times did I say? Bulletproof briefcases. We need bulletproof briefcases. So he warps himself out and gets away from them. And basically, now he has to go find his family. So
right.
First
he's got 10 days to the apocalypse.
Yep.
The new apocalypse.
As he says, it followed us. So the first thing that he does is he recognizes that there's somebody watching from the window of the alley. And he goes up, and it's this guy who is a conspiracy theorist.
His name's Elliot.
Elliot. And
Mr. Robot.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? Like, same... Not the same type of guy, but it's just, I think it's funny. I don't know if that's why they called him Elliot, but that was my brain.
I'll say Elliot Ness. Yeah. So basically, Elliot has been witness to every one of the siblings popping out in that alley. Sometimes just the light flash, sometimes he actually saw somebody. He talks about how Luther came back for 6 months every night, yelling.
Yeah. Some girl.
Yeah.
Vanya? Yeah, that's it.
No, it wasn't Vanya.
No,
it was
Allison.
Allison, yeah. And so basically his first lead is Diego.
Yeah.
Diego got arrested with several knives outside of Lee Harvey Oswald's house.
Because he wants to stop the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Yep. He thinks that this is going to save the world, you know, by stopping. And he even says to Five, he's like, you know, next you can take me back to kill Hitler. I'll slit Hitler's throat and then we'll be all good. I'll go back to the future with you and stop any apocalypse you want. But basically, he's in an asylum now.
Yeah, because they'll think he's crazy.
Yep.
And he's kind of acting a little crazy.
He is kind of acting
a little crazy. He has a tremendous hero complex.
Yes. Yes, he does. Because he thinks that he has the knowledge of the future. He's the only one that can defend the president. He has to stop what's going to happen to him. And he has a, I wouldn't say girlfriend, but he has a female friend.
There's a girl in the asylum as well who's crazy. And they seem to get along while at the same time despise each other.
Yep. And she tells him that if he's going to escape, she wants in and she can help by creating a distraction. She's got some fighting skills.
She does.
She kicks a lot of ass. And actually, I think there's more to her than we know yet. He says, where'd you learn to fight like that? She's like, my mom, let's go.
The assassin trio shows up at the asylum. We're assuming looking for Diego.
Yeah.
And
because Five basically leaves him there. He tells them, he's like, yeah, by the way, my brother's trying to escape. He filed down the bars in his cell, and you should really dope him up.
And that's what they do.
Yep. And Diego's like, fuck you. And he's like, I'll be back for you later.
Yeah.
Because he's got time.
Right. And not much time, but he's got time. So Diego wakes up, dislocates his shoulder, gets out of the straitjacket, picks a lock, starts beating people up, struggling to.
Because his shoulder's just...
Yeah, runs into the girl. She pops his shoulder back in. You think they're going to kiss, but she pops his shoulder back in, so she's distracting him.
Yeah.
And then they escape together.
Well, they shouldn't have. I mean, I had a problem with this because, like you said, the assassins showed up, and they, all three of them had full automatic machine guns firing down that hallway at two human targets, and not a bullet hit them.
Well, they're not great shots.
Yeah. So, yes, they escape. Meanwhile... We've gotten glimpses into each one of the other siblings.
Yeah, Luther works for Jack Ruby as his bodyguard.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the guy that kills Oswald.
Yeah.
After Oswald kills Kennedy, allegedly.
And he's not only his bodyguard, but he is a pit fighter.
Yep.
And, you know, one of those, like, he can beat any guy that comes in there, but he puts on a good show.
He waits for his boss to give him the go-ahead.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he just kills them. And that, you know, the one guy that he's fighting... he knocked him down and should have won, and then the guy grabbed a knife and was going to cut him, and he's like, all right, and he fucking
breaks his arm.
But yeah, he works in the club, and he's a bouncer, and he seems to be happy with his lot in life at this point. Because when Five comes to visit him, he's like, we gotta stop the apocalypse, and he's like, I don't care.
We're good.
I got shit going on. This is my life now.
Allison has married a civil rights activist.
Yeah.
And
also seems happy.
Her throat is repaired, so she can talk again. And as we see at the beginning of the episode, she says, I heard a rumor that you guys' heads were going to explode.
That I blew your brain.
Yeah.
I blew your minds.
Yeah, so she has her powers back.
Yep.
And basically they're having a meeting about having a protest rally while the president's there at her place of business. And some white guy shows up who owns other buildings. He's like, and he goes, and basically he doesn't say it, but he's, what are you people doing here? You shouldn't be doing this. Stick of his nose where it doesn't belong.
Yep.
And Raymond, her husband's trying to be all civil about it. And she's kind of not. And then she ends up kind of beating up the white guy a little bit, just putting him in his place. Because when Raymond goes to close the door, he sticks his foot in the door. He's like, did you just slam that door on my foot on purpose? Yep. That's assault. I'm going to get you, you know. And so she shows him what assault is.
Yeah.
And he gathers his hat and leaves. I was waiting for her to use her powers. I heard a rumor that you were a worthless people. You know what I mean?
Right. But she seemed to go the old school role.
Vanya's got amnesia.
Allegedly. She says she doesn't remember anything.
She gets found by this family. Like, she gets hit by a car, basically, when she stumbles out of the alley. And this son and mother, whatever, wife... She's living with this family. Husband, wife, and son. The son's got autism.
Kind of like a living nanny.
Yeah, the son's got, like, autism or something.
He doesn't speak.
No, but he's connected to Vanya. But she doesn't have any memory, doesn't know who she is. The husband seems cool with her being there.
But the husband's got some shady stuff going on.
He does, yep.
Like, he's talking about how, oh, I haven't sold him yet, I gotta go, and he's gonna be gone all night doing his big sale. And,
He's got some sketchy shit going on.
Yeah, he does. But Mom and Vanya bond over a cigarette and some whiskey. And...
Yeah. Oh, Lila's the name of the other patient. Okay. And then we found out that Klaus has started a cult.
Barely.
Basically.
Well, no, do we actually find that out in this episode?
I think so, yeah.
No, I mean...
Because he leaves his followers to go to... Because I feel like he goes back every once in a while to see if he can find his siblings.
Oh.
Because that's what he's doing. But then, of course, he gets into trouble and shit happens and...
Basically, he picks a fight with some bar guys.
Yeah.
And plays poker with them. And doesn't... He's using... I can't remember his name.
His brother.
His brother, the ghost. He's using him to cheat. And the guy, you know, his brother's like, fuck you. You know, I just want to. So, yeah, he's not doing so well, but then again, he never was.
Yep. So, good episode.
I love this show.
Really, really good episode. I really enjoyed it.
It's another one that I wanted to watch more.
I know, me too, but I didn't.
The moment I saw the opening scene, the opening fight scene of the apocalypse and all of them doing the, you know, X-Men shit, I was like, I want to watch more of this.
I did too.
So, yeah, I'm very much looking for... Oh, and also, it's got to be said, because this was true of the first season, the soundtrack is fucking stellar already.
Oh, yeah, the soundtrack's amazing.
Oh, my God, it is so good already. Just one episode in, I'm hooked. So, yeah. Is that it for shows?
I think that's it.
Okay.
I'm just into movies now.
Yeah.
I watched a short documentary. It's not really a movie, but it's on a show, but it's a short documentary on Netflix called Speed Cubers.
I've seen the advertisements for it a million times.
Yeah.
I knew you'd watch it, so.
Well, it's 48 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I expected. It is about the Rubik's Cube World Championship, but it's more of a story of this guy named Felix, who was from Australia, and he's like, was a champion for years and years and years. And then the new kid on the block, Max, who is an autistic kid. And it's more about how playing Rubik's Cube and going to competitions with his families and on and on and on has really brought him out, like, of his autism. Okay. And how, like, this has been so good and healthy for him because, you know, he's able to overcome barriers a lot of autistic kids don't, or similar to his style. Because of the Rubik's Cube and going through these competitions and his admiration for Felix and how we feel it, how Max and Felix kind of become best friends. It's really, really good. Like, I was surprised. It's not what I expected. I expected to be more about the Rubik's Cube World Championships as opposed to, no, it's a story of these two people and this is what they did and this is how they became friends, which involved the Rubik's Cube. So I liked it.
Nice.
I'll just jump into a couple of older movies I watched that I'd seen before. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Awesome.
I watched it with Kanan last night. I completely forgot this one part. Kevin Bacon has a bit part as in his character is guy who chases cab. It's when him and Steve Martin are trying to run down the same cab like that's in the middle of the street in New York, you know. So I think that's funny.
Awesome.
Kanan and I watched Due Date a few weeks ago, and I was like, let's watch the Due Date original. Because it's the same kind of concept, you know. Two guys...
Have to get across country.
Have to get across the country and mishaps along the way. So, it's a good movie. Kanan's big takeaway was how everyone was smoking everywhere. People were smoking on the plane. They were smoking in restaurants. They were smoking in hotel rooms. They were people did this? Like, he was just blown away by people smoking everywhere.
Dude, I still remember going into a restaurant. That was the first question. Dude, hotels.
Yeah.
Smoking or non-smoking?
Yeah.
Do you want a smoking room or a non-smoking room?
I think that's still a thing.
In some places?
Hotels, yeah. Well, like, I remember my first wife and I, we were on our fifth wedding anniversary down in Connecticut. And so I know this was...
Foxwoods?
No, it was in Danbury. So I know it was September 30th, 2003. And we went out to eat at Bennigan's. And we walked in and the lady goes, smoking or non-smoking? I was like, what? That's a thing down here? And she's like, well, until tomorrow, the new law goes into effect on October 1st. All restaurants have to be non-smoking.
I will see you tomorrow.
Yeah. I was like, we want non-smoking, please. And they're like, yeah. So they put us over in the non-smoking section. But I don't know. It was because Kate doesn't really remember restaurants in Maine having smoking sessions.
Really?
Yeah. The only one that really, because no one in her family really smoked when they went to a restaurant.
Right.
The one that always stands out in my mind is Pizza Hut in Western Ave when it existed there, because the smoking section was literally a step down in a separate room, as opposed to other places where, like, the smoking section abutted the non-smoking section.
Friendlies.
Yeah, Friendlies, exactly. So, but, yeah, I don't remember when
restaurants. And it was weird because, like, for the longest time, the smoking sections were bigger than the non-smoking sections.
Yes, yeah. Yep.
What else you got?
Hold on a second.
Okay, I'm holding on.
I want to see if I can find this. 2009.
No.
That's for sure. Because it just wasn't.
Nope.
Nope, that's not accurate. Let's see here. This is talking about statewide ban on smoking in all enclosed public places. It was 2018, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Nope.
Oh. 1999.
That sounds a bit more like it.
Yep. July 1st, 2004, laws from 1985 and 1999 were expanded such that smoking is banned statewide in all workplaces and public places in Maine, including bars and restaurants. So, but yeah, so 1999. Does that make sense? Because I knew it was like, we had already been smoke-free at restaurants in Maine for quite a while by the time 2003 hit. So yeah, 4 years makes sense.
Yep.
Sorry, sidetracks.
Yeah.
So we watched that. He enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It's a good movie. You know, Steve Martin gets pissed off at Mrs. Poole there about when he shows up to get his rental car and it's not there. And he says, fuck, like 20 times in a sentence. But it's no Robert Downey Jr. losing his mind spitting on the dog.
Right.
Today. Yeah.
Which was just fucking brilliant.
We watched Reservoir Dogs as well.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
How old's your kid?
14. Okay. He likes Quentin Tarantino, and well, I found my son's not big into... He's seen Pulp Fiction before. He's seen Django. So he kind of... But he's not huge into... Reservoir Dogs has more dialogue scenes than, like, most of the other movies do.
Oh, yes, it does.
And he's not big into those, so... we also watched Super Troopers 2 together.
Nice.
I like that movie. It's great. And then Addison wanted to watch a movie together, and I said, absolutely. And she picked out Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Perfect.
Yeah. She loved it. She actually watched it again while she was here up in her room. That movie is so friggin' good.
It's amazing.
Is it the best movie in the MCU?
Might be.
I don't know, though, because Infinity Wars... or Endgame, that was pretty fucking awesome. Because that was a culmination of 10 years and 20 movies or whatever it was. But as a standalone Spider-Man to the Spider-Verse, pretty amazing. Anyhow, what did you watch for movies? I got two more, but I'm going to hold off.
I watched, like I said, this was for a special thing. I got a notification on my phone that Amazon is running a promotion for the next whatever.
Yeah.
So for each month, you click a button to sign up. That's air quotes.
Yeah.
And you watch 5 hours worth of movies. And they've got a list of them. Like, August's theme is action movies.
Yeah.
Summer blockbuster action movies. So I watched Knives Out, which I don't really consider an action movie.
I don't either, do I.
But it was on the list. And Captain America, The First Avenger.
Oh, that's a great movie.
And then there's other ones on there. There's a couple of the... Mission Impossibles, there's the original Avengers. But basically, if you watch 5 hours, at the end of it, you get 2 credits on your Amazon account. You get a $5 digital credit, and you get a $5 credit towards Cheez-Its.
Okay, so tell me this shit. I would watch 5 hours of movies.
Right? You can even put them on the background.
Yeah.
And so I did that, but apparently every month you just click the button. You could still do it now.
Yeah.
I'd go on your Amazon page on, like, a laptop or something like that and look it up, Cheez-It promotion. And You basically just say, yeah, sign in, and they monitor, and if you watch 5 hours worth, they're like, great, here's $5, and $5 towards Cheez-Its. Okay, what's September going to be? So that's why I watch those two. The only other thing that I watch, and I gotta say this, you know how Netflix likes to put those specials at the top, you know, oh, look, here's a comedy special you might like.
Yeah.
I got one on there.
Yeah.
And now I'm fucking obsessed with this guy. Jack Whitehall. He's British. His dad apparently is very big in Britain. He's opened a couple of production companies and is famous to them. Dude, this guy is a riot. He was so much fun to watch. I laughed so often that I found another one of his and started watching that. And apparently he's got a show on Netflix called Jack Whitehall Travels with My Dad.
Yep.
And it's just them traveling, because I guess his dad is, like, very stuffy and British and uptight, and Jack is not that at all. I can't say enough good about this guy as a comedian. He was a riot. It was great. I strongly suggest this. If you want something funny, if you want a good laugh, go watch some Jack Whitehall shit.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check it out. Woo. So I got two more movies to talk about.
Go for it.
One of them real quick, Foxy Brown.
Oh, yeah.
The old 1973 or 74 blaxploitation flick with Pam Grier. I kind of got into, like, I watched Shaft last month.
Yeah.
Or a few weeks ago, whatever it was. And I wanted to check out some more of those famous blaxploitation flicks I've never seen, so I checked out Foxy Brown. Don't have to watch that again. Not that it wasn't bad. Not that it wasn't good, but it wasn't tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
But the last movie I watched was at your urging.
Oh?
Yep. And I almost texted you a couple of times this week about it, but I decided to wait till today.
Okay. This is either going to be good or bad.
So I watched Aquaman.
Okay. Finally. And it's been a while for me, so... yeah. What'd you think of Aquaman?
I didn't hate it. But at the same time, it allegedly takes place after Justice League, which doesn't make any fucking sense. Because in Justice League, he went to fucking Atlantis. But in this, he's never been to Atlantis. But this takes place after Justice League. Yeah, that's one big glaring hole. I will say this. Just for nostalgia, I fucking love that Dolph Lundgren had a major role and killed it. Like, he did a great job.
He really committed to the part.
I've seen, like, Dolph Lundgren, you know, obviously Rocky was his big breakthrough. And then Universal Soldier, and he was in The Expendables as kind of a crazy guy, cut loose.
And he's been in a bunch of stuff.
He's been a bunch of low-budget shit, but I'm happy for him that he got this, you know, this big role, and he did a great job with it.
His fake hair was terrible.
Yeah, well...
Especially considering it was fake hair that was fake underwater hair, yep. So it constantly had to be digitally waving in the water.
There was some good moments. There was some bad moments. Very predictable storyline as it went. Very, 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 very predictable. I'm pretty fucking positive in Justice League. He was already the king of Atlantis. Just didn't hang out there ever, and they gave him grief for never being there. But maybe that was a Joss Whedon thing.
Probably.
And in the Snyder Cut, he has never been to Atlantis. Right. Who knows? But still, Aquaman was made far enough after Justice League, they could have adjusted that storyline. You, thoughts?
I had so many issues with this thing.
Yeah.
A lot of them around the CGI.
Yeah.
A lot of them around the god-awful use of exposition.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. The opening part there where Dolph and the bad guy, and they're all standing there like, they're like, the kings have been called together, but the kings can't be called together unless this is going to happen. Well, you would need the backing of all three kingdoms. Well, blah, blah. Like, they literally sat there and spelled out the plot of the movie.
Oh, and it's also, don't forget the, like, I'm not going to attack the surface dwellers. Yes, they're pieces of shit because they pollute our waters, but this is not the way to handle it. And then, oh, look, here comes a submarine that was apparently stolen, and Black Manta's, you know, firing torpedoes at them, and then, oh, look, the hero or whatever that wants to rule everything and destroy the humans saves the day, and now Dolph Lundgren's character's like, I guess I'll back you.
Yeah. Oh, well, then, obviously, they need to be stopped.
And then his daughter calls him out on it, and is like, don't you think it was kind of convenient, Dad?
Yeah.
And he's like, So, yeah, I had some issues.
I had some issues with how much of it took place on land. The only time in the movie that I actually laughed was more of a meh, which was when they found the ancient device that needed water in the middle of the desert. He was like, I could pee on it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a few funny moments, or what were supposed to be funny moments and lines. I'm not going to say I hated the movie, because I definitely didn't hate it. I don't have a need to watch it again.
And that's the thing, is I did not hate this movie either. I did not have the reaction like I did with Batman vs. Superman. That being said, I also don't ever need to see it again.
Yeah.
And had some major issues with it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, good. I'm glad you finally seen it so that you can understand.
Yes. Well, you know, it was on HBO Go. It was on my HBO Go, and I don't have it anymore. So I'll watch this before it goes away.
So you watched the trailer tonight, 2 minutes before.
Oh, God, yeah. I watched a new trailer for Fargo. And you watched it as well, because I rotated my laptop around so we could both watch it.
You're much more of a Fargo fan than I am.
I really enjoyed the movie years ago, obviously, and I've enjoyed the new series run. This really doesn't tell us much of anything.
Nope.
We see Chris Rock is in it. We see it seems to take place in the...
Jason Schwartzman's in it.
Yeah. Takes place in the 20s or 40s. Probably the 40s. It was a legit teaser.
Yeah.
Hey, the show's coming back. Here's some of the people in it.
Yep.
And they're in conflict with each other.
Here's some scenes. Yeah. You make your own.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. I watched some trailers, and I shared all three of them with you. One of them was for a legitimate TV series coming out called Teenage Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, that was interesting.
The 1950s. Kansas City, Missouri during the 1950s.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, Teenage Bounty Hunters looks interesting. It's two girls who are twins, but they're fraternal twins. They're not identical. And they get jobs as bounty hunters.
But they're like 15 or 16, or maybe 16.
So they still got high school problems and boys and talking about, like, periods and orgasms and stuff.
Yeah. One of them has sex.
Yep.
So I guess that makes you the naughty twin after all, or right, whatever. But yeah.
And then I saw trailers for two documentaries that I'm interested in. One was Happy Happy Joy Joy.
Yes!
The behind the scenes of Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, that looked like I wasn't sure what to expect. It looks great.
It's already intriguing me that there was a lot of conflict and a lot of shady shit. And then the other one that I'm really stoked for is From Bedrooms to Billions, the PlayStation Revolution.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to check that out myself just because I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they start right with, you know, the whole Nintendo signing Sony up to develop the disc player for them. Yeah, I'm very interested in that. And other than that, I only have a couple of little news things.
Yeah.
Just today they announced Hunters has been renewed for season 2.
Okay.
They don't know when it's coming out yet, but it has been officially renewed. So that's good. Patty Jenkins says that Wonder Woman 3 will probably be her last. We haven't even gotten Wonder Woman 2 yet, but she's going to be working on the third one.
Cool. At least we know there's a third one coming.
And the last one, this will probably mean absolutely nothing to you, but there's a Splinter Cell animated series coming to Netflix. Splinter Cell is a game series that...
I'm familiar, yeah.
Yeah, Tom Clancy, Sam Fisher. I really hope that they do it right and they get Michael Ironside into the voice of Sam Fisher because he's been the voice of Sam Fisher and everything else.
Is Michael Ironside still alive?
He is, because he just did the voice of Sam Fisher in Breakpoint DLC. So I really hope that they keep him alive and, I'm stoked for that because it's spy intrigue, it's political intrigue, it's like Jack Ryan but with a lot more killing and tactical stealth and night vision goggles. Yeah.
I don't care. Well, that does sound cool.
Yeah.
I guess that's everything.
I'm a little out of breath, so yeah.
All right, sounds good. Well, you can find me again on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that is our show.
Later.